Hey, this is Danny G, and tonight I'm so excited to do my very first podcast with a guest who's not here with me. She's actually calling in from New York. What's up,
Woo.
Amanda? What's
Hey.
going on? So I'm sitting here with Mrs. Amanda White Del Pino. Amanda and I went to high school together. We graduated from
The Morgan Park High School.
yes, class of 2003. I've
Oh,
said
three
it,
Mustangs
yes, O3
represent.
Mustangs. I said it once, I'll say it again. We were the best class that ever walked those
Ever,
hallways.
ever, ever, ever. No one can tell me any different.
We got too many
I
receipts. Too many.
know. We got all the receipts. All the teachers loved us.
They
What
loved
other
us
class?
then, they loved us now.
Yep, even now.
We love us now. We
Yeah,
still
we
like get
do.
along as a class because that's actually how Amanda and I stayed connected. Because I don't
Yes.
think we had many classes or any
Right.
classes.
No, not at all. Because I knew your sister, but we knew all the same mutual friends. But then we connected on Facebook, been Facebook friends forever,
Yep.
chiming in every once in a while with things. And then, yeah,
Yep.
it's
And then, of
crazy.
course, when all of the Zodiac goodness started coming out, and everybody started realizing how, with social media, you could finally put your zodiac sign, you can shine a light, and then
Exactly.
you can also shine a spotlight on all the zodiac signs that cause heartache and strife throughout the world.
No, really, but really.
So, every time an Aries, you know, when it was Aries, 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 every time Amanda posted something, I was like,
Yep,
heart, heart,
all the
heart.
Aries, all the Aries. People hate on the Aries, but we get stuff done
We
all
do.
the
And
time.
we're very direct, but we love you.
Exactly. And it's like one of those things that we give you tough love, but it's all because we're just trying to reach out and make sure that you are right.
We do. And it's a fire. It is a very strong bond fire. The Aries
Yes.
is a strong contained
Yes.
heat. It can be like a roaring fire really quickly, but it's contained. We not like, wildfire like a Leo.
Oh no.
They and we
Oh
love the
no.
other fire signs.
Right.
Sagittarius is kind of like a candle.
Like a tiny little
Yeah,
candle
like they are
blow
strong. They shine a light. You need your light, but
Exactly.
the
But
Aries is a bonfire.
shout out to all of my lady Leos out there, because these
Yes.
male Leos out here, I be ready to fight and I can't. But that's all.
Yes,
It's
I love the women Leos. I'd be ready
like
to fight the male
power
Leos.
duo to the max. To the max. Because we can
Yes.
check our egos and get stuff done. I don't know about the males. It's just nope.
What have you heard about Aries men?
I dated one once, and that did not go over too well.
You too similar?
Too similar, and I think the ego is a bit much. If they can't learn how to check their egos, just like Leo males, then it's just never gonna work. It's never gonna work. And then just get upset. It's like, oh, but what? It's me? What do you mean? Come on.
I heard that Aries men are crazy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of like a couple. Yeah, it's true.
But we not crazy.
No, we're not. I mean, we can be if the situation called for
That's
it,
that bonfire.
but for the most part, we can check ourselves. Like, for the most part, people are too afraid for us to be crazy, so we never get a chance to be crazy.
They know better.
They do, and
Because we
that's fine.
communicate clearly. People know
Exactly.
exactly what we feel. We don't hide
Exactly.
our feelings. Like, we're not passive aggressive.
I can be.
Really?
I can be. But that comes with like, I think that portion of me comes with like sort of how I grew up and being the youngest in my family and like having to check my emotions like even more so, but then also trying to not be in the center of all the negativity and arguing, because I hate to argue. I
Yeah.
really do. So I can get passive aggressive. It's not one of my finest traits, but I'm learning, but I also can't fix my face either. So the passive aggressiveness is just direct if you just look at my face.
Yeah. And you know what? That's, again, Aries being super honest and reflective. We know who we are. But that face stuff, I think, is just part of our authenticity.
Yeah.
We keep it real. I mean,
because it's on my face, but I respect you enough to not say it out loud.
I respect you enough to not say it out loud, because if you heard what I was thinking,
we would never speak again.
You probably, like, yeah.
People should be afraid of what's in my brain.
People should be afraid of what's in my brain. That, I think, is a great segue about it, because what's in your brain, because you are incredibly creative.
Thank you.
And I want to hear the story about how a girl from the south side of Chicago who was in the marching band, man, who clearly grew up the youngest in her family, who identifies as passive aggressive because she don't like arguing.
I don't like
how
arguing.
You made it to New York. Because New York, that's different.
The short, like, 5-second answer is that after I graduated, I was in New York 7 days later. That's the 5-second short answer. The long answer, or longer answer, is, let's see, born and raised in Chicago. My family is sort of like a cross between being on the medical side of things, like my dad, my sister, aunt, and cousins, and then like on the finance side with like my mom being an accountant, my brother, and all these things. And then I'm like the one who likes to draw and who loves music and who loves movies and who likes to write and like all these creative things. And it's interesting because no one really knew sort of how to foster that in my family, because no one was that. Yeah. You know, the closest that came to it was like my cousin out in Cali, who I don't even really, unfortunately, talk to that much, just because sometimes family just drifts apart. But he's the only other creative one in my family that I know of. Mm. He draws. I think right now he's a reverend. So that's like he's not even living his creative truth, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I legit sort of wanted to segue toward film was senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Moore had a film class.
I think my sister, was she in that film class with you?
She
may have taken it her senior year.
She might have been.
Because she talks about that film class.
Yes.
Tell us about Mr. Moore's film class.
Yes, Mr. Moore's film class. Like, we watched, like, Blade Runner, talking about film noir, and, you know, what else? We watched The Birds, which was absolutely hilarious to look at, because it's a Hitchcock film, and it's just really hilarious to me to watch, because you know we could find humor in anything, and it's supposed to be a horror movie.
He was torturing those women in real life on the set, right? In that movie?
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know as much about Hitchcock as I probably should. But that's what I hear. I feel like I was sort of on the cusp of like about to go through a Hitchcock phase, because I have some coworkers that have been watching old movies and we've been talking about it. So if we do a part two to this, we can talk about that.
Okay.
So when we're applying to colleges, I actually didn't really know where I wanted to go. So I was into interior architecture, believe it or not, because my mom was whispering in my ear about, like, what are you going to do that makes you money? And I'm like, okay, I guess I could do that. They make money. But then I really wanted to also go into theater, and which wasn't completely out of the realm because, again, like, senior year, I was in Greece with, like, a lot of my other classmates.
With the car. Greece Lightning.
Grease Lightning.
Yes, I remember. Because we said that Shalanke was going to take that to prom. Yeah.
First of all, that was the best thing ever. And I think I have it digitized somewhere. Thank you, Ayana. Shout out to your mom.
Shout out to Ayana.
Yes. And I still have it. I think I digitized it. So it's like on an actual video file now, which is great. I won a small role because I was still in a marching band. You know, shout out to my flag team. But I love being on stage. And outside of that, I was in two other plays at this DuSable Museum,
mm-hmm.
Like senior year of high school and then freshman year of college. So I was like, I kind of really love theater. Like, I really want to do that. But again, my mom was just like, well, what are you going to do to find a job? And so I eventually landed on film.
Mm-hmm.
So with film, I'm like, cool, I can do theater if I want to do theater, because I can be in movies. And if I wanted to do set design stuff, I could do that too, because film is just like a whole just sort of slew of things. And anyone who doesn't even have a film degree can slide into the film world in any kind of way. They just can. There's too many people that are consultants and creative and writers and too many people. And so I initially wanted to go to USC in Cali. Mom was like, nah, that's too expensive and that's too far.
Yeah. Cost so and distance. Yeah. Two real cost factors for Black families.
Real talk. Because that's probably like the reason why a lot of people just end up going to like community college and then just dropping out or like not even going, which, you know, it's horrible that it costs so much money to get an education in this country. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. That's part three.
Yeah. So my sister actually ended up suggesting Columbia College in Chicago. And they actually turned out to have a pretty amazing film program. They're one of the few film schools at the time that still worked on actual film. So I got a chance to film on 16 millimeter and edit, like cutting up actual film and syncing actual reels of audio. Like it was pretty dope. And, you know, I graduated in 4 years and I decided to leave my senior year of college. I literally had a moment of, I need to get out of here. Like, and that's because of me not really finding what I needed in Chicago in general. Mm-hmm. And also like other like outside craziness that I was just like, I need to get out of this environment that I'm in. Mm-hmm. And I decided sort of Christmas break of senior year, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna leave. It's either gonna be LA or it's gonna be New York, and I'm gonna send out my resume to both. And I got the most response from New York. I got some response from Cali, but they're just like, oh yeah, when you're out here, then hit us up. But New York was like, oh, when you're coming out here to visit, we can talk then. So I was like, all right, cool. So the very first time I was in New York was spring break of senior year of college, and I went on like 3 interviews. Mm-hmm. And maybe about a month before graduation, I got called for a second follow-up interview. And then they told me that I got a job out there. So I literally got a job before I graduated from college. And I graduated, finished up all my RA duties because I was an RA. Yeah. See, helping people.
Yeah.
Not even thinking about it. Yeah. Without even thinking about it. And I graduated, wrapped up all that stuff. And then 7 days after graduation, I was in Brooklyn. Started work that Monday, and see, almost 12 years later. Yeah. Almost 12 years later.
Still in Brooklyn.
Still in Brooklyn. I have not left Brooklyn. I work in Manhattan, but haven't left Brooklyn.
Are you a Chicagoan?
I'm still a Chicagoan, but I also consider myself a Brooklynite too.
Okay.
I do. Because sometimes it's funny because when I have friends come to visit, they're like, what is this accent you have? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I still sound like I'm from Chicago sometimes because people out here call me country.
Yeah.
Depending on what I say. But then when I leave, I have like a Brooklyn thing going on. I don't know. And then my husband's from Brooklyn. And so I hear him talking every day. And it just, it's all in there. It's just a hodgepodge of accents going on.
Tell me about Brooklyn. So you're a Brooklynite. Tell me about Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, I fell in love with Brooklyn because I felt like Brooklyn was the closest thing to Chicago that I can get outside of Chicago.
Okay.
And at the time, I lived in like super deep into Bay Ridge when I first moved here, and for like a year. And then I moved to Bed-Stuy.
Okay.
And that was like south side of Chicago to me. And so it's like, you know, it was predominantly Black. It probably still is, but who knows? Because I got priced out of Bed-Stuy. Yeah, gentrification.
Gentrification in Chicago is.
Even when I left, I was like, who's going to live in all these condos?
I still want to know. And they won't let us buy them.
Of course not. And that's real because even here with all these condos, they're not even 100% full. They're like barely even halfway full of people. People buy these condos and then like go and live off where they're supposed to live and like rent out these condos. It's ridiculous. So Bed-Stuy, that was my jam. It was predominantly Black. It was very like homey and it was like a neighborhood. It wasn't like I appreciated getting out of Manhattan because Manhattan to me was just like one big downtown Chicago to me.
Uh-huh.
And so it was nice getting away from Manhattan, getting away from work to come home to a neighborhood.
Yes.
And then I was there for about maybe 8 years, and then I got priced out. So now I'm chilling in Bensonhurst, which is predominantly Chinese and Italian.
Interesting. What's that like?
Well, it used to be an Italian neighborhood, but then Chinese people moved in, so it's now sort of a mix. There's still some Italian spots over here, but like I feel like my landlord's Asian, but I'm not sure if he's like Chinese or Korean. Mm-hmm. But there's like a dumpling spot on the corner, which is actually pretty dope. But the train's on the corner. I'm cool. I like living deep in Brooklyn because it's quiet. But I do miss being around Black people. That's real.
I was going to ask you. So you know Chicago is incredibly segregated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How is it in New York living, like you just said, in a different neighborhood?
It's interesting. Because in the grand scheme of things, when you go to places, it's a mix of everybody, mm-hmm. which is beautiful and it's fantastic. And I love seeing little bits of everyone. But I do miss being around predominantly Black people all the time because, you know, I mean, I have a lot of Black friends, but then I also have like a lot of Latino friends and Asian friends. And, you know, a good chunk of us, it's like I mostly hang with a lot of my Latino friends. And it's like a sprinkle of us in there. But I'm like, every time I hang with my homegirl's friends, because she went to Howard, and I hang out with her and her crew, I'm just like, oh, I miss Black people.
Yeah.
I miss it. I just, because this is a feeling I get when I'm around people that look like me and who've had like-minded experiences. Not saying that, you know, Latino people that I hang with don't have similar experiences, because they do, but it's just different.
The vibe
is just different. The energy is just different. I love all my brown people. I do.
How's the food in Brooklyn compared to New York? I'm sorry, compared to Chicago.
The food is just good. You have like way more diverse stuff here. Like Chicago has come up a lot in the food scene the last couple of years. But for a while, I was just like, oh, I can't get this outside of New York. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. But Chicago's come up a little bit. I love the food here. As far as the pizza question, before you even asked,
I wasn't even gonna ask.
Because everybody asks. It's just different. I love them both. There are specific places here that I like. And, you know, Chicago, regular pizza. And I always say this, flat pizza, because people who aren't from Chicago just assume that when I talk about pizza in Chicago, that I'm talking about deep dish pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no. We don't like go around eating deep dish pizza like left and right like that. Like,
it's not deep dish.
Thing.
Homeranian is not deep dish.
Right. It's just like if people talk about eating pizza all the time in Chicago and you assumed it was deep dish, I mean, I know Chicago has a weight problem. I get that. But that's my God, all that cheese? My God.
I had to give up the cheese. I became lactose intolerant in my older years. I miss pizza.
And I know I might probably be, but I'm just going to fight it.
Y'all just go with it. It's people that just, they say they'll just suffer later.
Well, it's not really like, I don't really suffer the after effects of it. It's like in the morning when I have cereal or yogurt, like I just get nauseous.
Oh.
But I can eat pizza fine.
Oh.
And I love cheese so much. Like, give me goat cheese. Yes. Yes. Goat cheese. Praise. Anyway, we're going off on tangent.
So you get to Brooklyn. No, mm-hmm. So you get to New York, you have your job fresh out of college,
mm-hmm.
a Chicago girl, now you're in New York. You're happy, mm-hmm. you're working in your dream career, making my way downtown. You're doing all that song, walking, singing, smiling, hat
man,
tossing in the air.
It wasn't glamorous at all. It was so not glamorous.
No?
No.
Did you have to walk to Brooklyn to get cheesecake?
The amount of steps that I took my first couple of years, my first 3 years in New York, the amount of steps that I took, basically, because I was what you call a runner at this post facility. And basically, they're like an intern that's getting paid.
Okay.
So, you know, if clients need coffee, if like, basically, you're doing office maintenance stuff, like, you know, making sure all the papers and pens are neat, and, you know, I'm helping the receptionist out with, like, taking calls and taking receipts and stuff like that. And eventually I moved into the vault, which is, like, where they kept all the film and everything. Because when I first moved here, they were still sending dailies in film reels and not, like, on a tape or in, like, files. Mm-hmm. So that was a whole thing. Like, I worked my first 4th of July, like, I was at work. Because, you know, I had no friends either. Aww. I knew, like, maybe two people here that were, like, complete opposite of where I lived. And so I did that. And then I went to another job that did visual effects. And I was a runner for a little bit. Then I worked in their machine room. But I was still, like, doing client stuff. So it was, like, not – that job is just – is not nice. It's not a nice job. It's, like, it can really tear you down if you don't have any kind of self-esteem whatsoever. Because people don't care about you. You know, you'll be lucky if you have a great boss who does care about you, or coworkers who do look out for you. Like, I was basically eating my first year, eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner at work. I didn't even know that the stove in my apartment didn't work until, like, 6 months into living there, because I only ate at work.
Yeah.
I was keeping all the long hours and was getting paid hardly a dime. Like, it was insane.
The sacrifice. You had to.
Yeah, that sacrifice was so real. And, you know, like, I'm here by myself, and it being homesick is also a thing.
Yeah.
And, but I'm also the type of person that, because I also edit, like, I'm a producer, but I do video editing as well. And I could sit in the room for, like, 12 hours in the dark, just, like, clack, clack, clacking away and creating and be fine. So, like, I do get homesick, but not a lot. And I was too busy to get homesick the first couple years, which was crazy. But now I'm like, I get homesick more now than probably what I did back then, which is funny. Yeah. So I was that, so visual effects. And then after like 2 years, I got let go.
And what year was this?
This was year three.
So this is 2010?
Yes.
Right when all of us got. We all got out of college.
2010 was probably one of the best and worst years of my adult life.
Yep.
Like, real talk.
Yeah.
Because I had lost my job.
Yep.
I had crazy family drama that, like, has completely changed the course of so many things. But then I met my husband in 2010. So I'm just like, there was, like, this beautiful, like, nice ray of sunlight and all the craziness that was going on. But I was unemployed for like 6 months.
Same.
I did work freelance producing for like 3 months that year, but collectively I didn't have a steady job for like 6 months. And this is the crazy thing, I was getting ready to pack my stuff up and move back home, because I went through my savings and I was like, I can't pay rent for the month of December. I don't know what's about to happen. I'm about to pack it up and just go. I'm about to break up with this dude I just met and leave. And I shit you not, like, midway through November, like, right before Thanksgiving, I got a call and I got a job.
Yes!
Yo, real talk. And I was like, and I hit my landlord up. I was like, listen, you know me. I'm so glad he was cool. I'm like, you know me. I can't pay on the first, but I got you on the 15th. He was like, all right, that's fine. I was like, Lord, the powers that be are telling me to stay here. That's what I was just like, preach. Like, I cried. That was like real tears, because I'm like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
Work is so expensive.
Yeah.
It's so expensive to live here. And I had two other roommates at the time. So I got my job. I'm still there. So
okay.
The job that I got in 2010, I am currently still there. Oh, excuse me. And they do audio post-production. And, you know, I love my coworkers. They're amazing. They work hard. And they deserve the world, because they put up with so much stuff. And they will roll in the dirt and just, like, get stuff done. So I love having a good team around me that I can work with.
Yes.
And not that, like, I can, like, demand and work. And because I'm also the type of person, because, like, I'm a producer there, and I'm not the type of person who just, like, shouts out demands of people or yells at people while they work, because that's not how you get people to work. Like, I feel very happy and blessed that I have a crew around me that I can work with.
Yes.
And it's nice. So, I mean, I've been there for 8 years. Yeah, 8 years.
You know, that's long for a millennial.
That's,
you know, you know, they girl. Should be giving you a gold watch at this point. You fully vested 3.5 times. Yeah. 8 years for a millennial.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
But then, so outside of all that stuff, I've been working on my outside, like, creative things. Like, so I shot a pilot presentation with my homie Corey, shout out to him, called Retails a couple years ago. And then right now we're working on a feature, like pre-production, with him and my other homie Wallace. So shout out to Wallace. And that's going to be good. It's like, it's something that, Wallace wrote, and we're trying to make it happen. And outside of that, last year has been like crazy writing for me, because whatever thing unlocked me at the beginning of last year, which I feel like it was post-wedding.
Yes.
It was post-wedding. And then whatever crazy reason, all of a sudden, the writer's block that I had since moving to New York completely just like shattered. And so I've had like all these ideas that have been rolling around. So I spent last year basically writing down like bits and pieces of different ideas. And so last year I actually ended up writing 2 different pilots, and I am sort of reworking the one that sort of is about sort of, I'm trying to like figure out how not to say it and not tell all of my ideas out there. But it basically goes into sort of millennials not following the path that our parents did.
Yes.
And creating a path on our own, but also touching on, you know, maternity in the US and doulas and why they're important, because Black mamas matter. They do.
Black mothers matter.
They do.
They do. They do. So it's interesting, because it's like, I want to go one of 2 ways. That's what she said. So, okay, I'll go the first way.
Both ways.
Yeah, hey, both ways. So, the first way, you said it's so easy for people to slide into film, because there's so many different opportunities. And I'm so thankful for that class in high school that you got exposed to that gave you an opportunity to channel that creativity and say like, hey, this makes sense and it clicks here and I can explore this. And this is real.
Yeah, it is real. Yeah.
And so
I grew up watching movies. Like, I went to the movies like every Friday growing up. Like, it was easy to do it then because you didn't have like 18 movies coming out every single Friday.
Yeah.
And so it just sort of made sense, like, when I went that way. And it's amazing. I do appreciate Mr. Moore in that film class my senior year, because if I didn't have that, I don't know if I would have even thought about it at all.
Yay. I just love that. And I love that you are so passionate about it, because I put something up on Facebook about maybe like a dream job or something. And you wrote that you worked in film. And so I slid in your DMs and I was like, hey, boo, hey, I think I have a movie idea. And you sent me like tons of resources and you're like, I want you to look at this and I want you to think about this and I want you to research this. And I like wrote all this stuff down.
That's such a great idea.
Yes, I really am excited about the idea and about like people telling their stories and having an outlet and an opportunity to tell their stories.
Yeah.
But
coupling
that with having creative ways to tell stories, one reason I started the podcast was really to talk about untalkable topics and things that we're not supposed to talk about and shine a light on them in creative and funny ways, but ways that are safe so people can feel comfortable and start to have the dialogue. And Black moms do matter, and Black motherhood does matter. And the sexual experiences and the experiences that we have as women, they matter. And so I think I mentioned that to you around like sex ed or sex health education. And then you came back with, maternity. And I was like, wait, are you a doula? And you were like, I am. And I was like, tell me more. sure. So, like, what is a doula? Like, I don't know why all of a sudden I don't have any kids. I hope to have some in the future.
But your friends have kids.
Yeah, my friends have kids. But, like, I don't know why all of a sudden doula was coming to mind or midwife was coming mm-hmm. to mind. Like, I feel like my spirit and the ancestors are like, listen, lady, you better start preparing yourself. Because yes. I know I don't want to, if I have a choice, and I know I have a choice, mm-hmm. but I would prefer to do more natural. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to go through that journey in a different way than to be propped up in the hospital if I don't yes. have to be.
Exactly, exactly. So how did I get to this? It's interesting. So I thought about it briefly at some other point in time. I think it might have been like in 2010 when I was like in between jobs. I'm like, what am I going to do? And I was like, almost like grasping at straws, and someone suggested it, and I was like, that's interesting, maybe I will, but the tuition for like these big name ones like Danya, like they're so expensive, and it's not as, I don't know, I feel like the curriculum isn't what I would want it to be. And I say that in saying, like, the place that I did train is called Ancient Song, and they are amazing. They are in Brooklyn and in Bed-Stuy, and they treat everyone, number one, but they do specialize in treating women who are low income, minority women, stuff like that. And they, in their curriculum and in their teaching, they go through all like the medical things and, you know, stuff that you should know as a doula, but then they also emphasize, you know, social constructs mm-hmm. that we're all in, and how to fight those social constructs when you're in a hospital setting or and stuff like that. So, and that's real. Yeah. Like, I've seen it. It's real. Like, mind you, and just to answer your question before, because I don't think I did, a doula is someone who is there for mothers and for their partners during the laboring process.
Okay.
No, I do not deliver the baby. But I do hold that leg up, and I do help with massaging, and I do help with giving alternative comfort measures if needed. And I am that point person between, you know, the family and the doctors if they are otherwise preoccupied.
Do you work with a midwife? Like, do you work, like, do you have a relationship with a midwife?
I don't, and I've been thinking about that. Like, if I didn't have a full-time job, because right now I've only doula'd for my close friends. So I have been there for, I've seen 3 babies going on 4 basically like any moment now. And so I haven't done it full time with someone who I don't know yet, because I have a full time job and I can't just like leave. Like, I'm willing to take the day off of work for my friends that I care about. Yeah. But like, I'm not going to put myself in the position to be a doula for someone who I don't really know that well, that I still need to like do my job and pay my bills.
Yep.
So if this was a situation where I wanted to go full time in that, then I'm here for it, but not yet. I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so I would like to do that. My friend who is about to give birth now, the hospital that she is delivering at in the Bronx, they actually have a host of midwives on their staff. So that would be a new experience for me, and I'm really excited about that. I really want to experience a water birth, and I know she wanted to do it, but she couldn't do it this time around. So if she ends up having another child, maybe.
Tell us about a water birth, because I want to have a water birth. Oh, and my God.
I want to experience one. So my cousin Tammy, who I love so much, she had both of her babies in South Africa. And for her second, she had a water birth. And she was telling me about the experience, and it just blew my mind. She's like we had soft music playing, and you know, she had her prayer on, and she felt safe and comfortable, and it was just like, the pictures that I saw were, it was like one of the most beautiful things that I've ever seen. And she's like, I was so calm and so relaxed, and it was just perfect. And I'm like, that's beautiful. That is so beautiful. because I think a lot of times mothers have sort of trauma in the hospitals because, like, they can't get comfortable. They can't just be in their own, you know, space. Yeah. And it's so intrusive in hospitals when you have nurses coming in and out, doctors coming in and out. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. And, you know, all of my friends who have had babies have had them in hospitals. And most of the experiences have been fantastic. Halfway. Yeah. There are things that have happened in each sort of birth that I've been at that I'm just like, do not like. And it's just because of the doctor delivering the baby or the nursing staff or, you know, just sort of how things turn out. And you just never know. Like, I understand people who want to make sure there are hospitals because they're just, what can happen? If something happens, I want to be near a hospital or OR, whatever. But there's also something to say about giving space in a birthing center or at home where you're in your zone. Like, mm-hmm. your comfort zone, your space, you know, where you feel most comfortable, where your body's going to be the most relaxed. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to experience that water birth Monday.
Yay.
I don't know if I'll do it, though. Like, that, I'm not even gonna lie, that scares me.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I love the fact that someone can choose to do that. And that's why I'm here. Like, if whatever you want to choose, it's up to me to help you advocate for it.
And now, how did you find your way here? Because I feel like I missed that part.
I started talking about it, then I stopped. I thought about it in 2010, yes. And then I never did it.
Okay.
And then, let's see, probably about two and a half years ago, my friend, Diana, who was pregnant with her first, she was just sort of talking about, like, the doula that she was going to get and everything. And she's like, you should really do it. I think you would be really amazing. You're so attentive to people, and people love talking to you and sharing with you. And, you know, you're so soothing. Your voice is so soothing. I'm like, is it, though?
You like the sarcastic voice, though?
Right. I can't help it. But then she's the one that suggested Ancient Song, and that's where I got my training from. Yeah, and that was like two and a half years ago. And she did me a solid on that one, because I appreciate her giving me that push. Because I know she had mentioned it again previously, because there was another time that she had mentioned it, like in between 2010 and like 2.5 years ago. Like, there was another time she's like, you should do that. And then, like, we never talked about it ever again. And then she's like, no, really, you should do that. So I'm like, this is like 3 different times that I've thought about this, so maybe I should just do it.
And so you found a way to, now, so you in New York, you're in this position, you've also found a way to look into becoming a doula, something that you looked at back in 2010 when you first lost the job, you mm-hmm. were trying to figure out, like, what am I going to do? Now mm-hmm. when you're stable, it's like, hey, I really still am interested, because your mm-hmm. friend told you. Mm-hmm. So you go and you do it. And what has been the most amazing, like, experience thus far for you as part of, like, your journey? Not just, like, I've been able to help, or I've been able to, you know, witness the birth of a baby, which I'm sure is amazing.
Oh, my gosh. I, like, cried every single time. I, like, bawled.
Yeah. But, like, for you personally, like, as you think about your journey and how every single moment in your life has prepared you for this, for right now and where you are. Like, how has all of this added to your story?
Oh, man. That's like, I'm going to cry. All the things that I've gone through just to lead me to this moment. And I know that this moment right here is still not it, because I haven't hit that moment where I'm just like, yes, yet. And I know it's there because I feel it. But, man, I know it sounds really corny to say that, like, I genuinely love helping people, but I've always wanted to make people feel, and I always wanted to nurture and, like, comfort people who feel excessively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get to do that, and I love being there for people, you know, whether it's my close friends or even if it is, like, people randomly talk to me, and I'd sit there and listen to them, and I talk to them. Like, that's, in another life, I was probably a psychologist, mm-hmm. like, real talk. But, like, my focus is, at the end of the day, the human psyche and the human brain and the heart, the soul. Like that's my focus at the end of the day. And it's always been my focus. And it's something that I'd never really realized until like this year, last year, like currently. And it really fills me up to be there for other people. And it fills me up to make people feel things. So if I can do that with being a doula, if I can do that with my writing or film, any of that, like, I feel like I've done my job and that makes me happy. And that's all I ever want. Yeah.
And how does your family feel for the one creative person? I think you called yourself the creative black sheep.
Yes, I'm the creative black sheep in my family. It's interesting because, like, my mom, I think, they just don't know what to think. I think that when good things happen, like when our lovely friend Darina Marie.
I love Darina.
You know, funny enough, like we don't talk every single day, but when we do, it's as if we never stopped. And she has actually been low-key part of that journey because, you know, her mom is the one whose plays I was in senior high school, freshman year of college.
My sister was in, I don't think you guys were in a play at the same time.
No, not at the same time, but I was in one of them.
Shout out to Bernard Productions.
Yep, Bernard Productions, shout out. I love her mom. She's so amazing. And, you know, that, and then even like her web series, which I know she's still working on. I'm shooting her some side eyes right now. I know you're still working on them, little girl. Love you. But, you know, that got into some film festivals and I like edited those. Like those, you know, those are things that she's been there and sort of been in that journey. So it's when stuff like that happens, like I told my mom about it, she's like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Like she doesn't realize that like I can actually like accomplish great things without being famous.
Yeah. I think it's different for them.
And you can be successful without being famous. And I think that that's probably the most that they're just like, oh, okay, Amanda's fine. She's cool. Because they just, I don't know, I always just go off and just do things myself and not, you know, I don't need anyone to hold my hand. I've never been that way. So it's always just like, she's all right. She's eating. She's doing things. Okay, that's all right. Good job.
So what do you do for self-care then? Because it's wonderful to be independent and to be able to fuel yourself and power yourself back up. But like you said, being homesick is real.
Yep, that's
being
real.
Being isolated is real. Like missing people being around like that look like you is real.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do to take care of yourself?
Yes, man. So the one thing that I finally did after like a couple years ago was start going to therapy. That was like the best decision that I've ever done in my adult life.
Yeah.
Because you need that. People need that. And it just, because like, so where I live is like so far away from all of my other friends. And so that's another thing. Like I'm outside, I'm isolated from my friends as well, who I talk to and hang out with all the time. Like I don't drive here.
Me either.
What?
Hashtag I ain't got no car.
Oh, that's fair. I let my license lapse like a crazy person and I'm about to try to get that back. I was like, that's the one fail of my life.
But you don't need one in New York, right? Like you don't need a car.
No, but like I want to go upstate and I want to go to Long Island. I need a car. Like I don't need a car, but I would like to drive.
Yeah.
So that would be something that I need to do for self-care. Like going to therapy was like so important to me because, you know, I can talk stuff off of her and I can talk stuff off of my husband and not necessarily, and I can still be there for my friends because like you being the person that you listen to your friends' things and you like being the soundboard and giving advice and even just a listening ear or a hug or whatever, if you take in all of that without letting go some of it, you're gonna have a breakdown.
Yeah.
You're completely gonna have a breakdown. So therapy was like the best thing ever. And I highly recommend if you're not in therapy, go to therapy. If you don't even think you need therapy, go to therapy.
You need therapy. Because
chances are you're gonna talk about something random and then all of a sudden you've been talking for 45 minutes, you're like, what? What did that happen? What happened? That's so real.
Last question.
Yes.
What What is your favorite thing to write about? Like, what gets you started? Like, what do you do to get your, like, creative? What's your creative process?
Oh, man. A really funny anecdote on that is, I don't know if you've ever read Shonda Rhimes' Year of Yes.
Yes, I was reading it, yep.
Okay, first of all, I read that and listened to the audiobook. Made me cry both times in certain parts because I felt it so much. But she talks about how she goes about writing, and I laughed so hard because it's real. So when I go and sit down and start writing, I don't just sit there and start. No, I don't just start doing that. Like, I watch TV, I surf the internet. I'm like, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. Like, I'm doing everything but that. But in the back of my head, I'm like working out things. I'm just like, no, this character is like this, so she wouldn't respond like this. And like, that would never work. But that's corny. Nope, that's corny. Because the thing is, like, the more you know your characters, the better and easier your story is going to write itself. And I always tell people, like, know your characters back to front, because you immediately know how your character is going to respond in situations. So, like, I do all that. It takes hours. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I only got 30 minutes to write something, but let me do it. And then I do it. And, you know, sometimes I write stuff, like, if I'm in transit on the train, like, I have my little notes app, and I just, like, sort of have an idea, and I just, like, write it down in that and then send it to myself. And then I'll write about it later, or, like, expand on it later. I have all kinds of random notes in different places for the pilot that I was talking about earlier, the one with maternity, if mm-hmm. you will. I have so many notes everywhere for that. So it's not really one way that I get into writing. It just completely depends on my mood and the space that I'm in and what I'm writing about and what problem I'm trying to figure out in that. Yeah.
Any advice for potential writers? Anybody you said, like, it's easy to slide in? Any final words of advice?
Sounds corny, but just do it. Because in the age of YouTube and Vimeo and the internet, you can make movies on a cell phone. There's a movie called Tangerine that was shot on a cell phone. There's a movie called, I think, High Flying Birds that's on Netflix right now. That was shot on an iPhone. You can shoot it on an iPhone and sell it to Netflix. You can do that. You can look at Issa Rae. She did Awful Black Girl on YouTube for years before Insecure got picked up. She's still doing stuff on YouTube right now. YouTube is your cash cow. You don't have to be famous in order to be successful.
You can at least grab a camera, shoot a viral. That's Kanye.
Yep. Yep.
Take the power in your own Kanye. Hands.
You and your Kanye.
You know I got a Kanye lyric for everything.
You really do.
I do. Thank you for talking with me, Amanda. I really appreciate it. You are just Black Girl Magic, backwards and forwards.
Thank you so much.
You are, and you're just the proof that, like, social media is valuable. People love to talk about it ruins relationships and it does this, but, like,
there's some positivity in there somewhere.
Yes, there is. You have the power in your own hands. You can use your powers for good, or you can use your powers for nefarious reasons.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. We don't do those
things.
Thank
you. We choose to use our powers for good.
Exactly. We use our powers for good. We don't use our powers for nefarious things in public.
In public. Unless we have to.
Unless we have to.
Bar fire, airy shit. You see how that go full circle?
Hell yeah. You see I love it.
We will be back for part two. We will continue to talk about this film. I'm going to write that movie. You know
I'm
this.
I'm here for it. Yes. I'm here for it. And I am going to write another version of my pilot. I'm still working on it. Working out the details.
Because it's a journey, and we have to stay committed to the journey. It's part of our journey. Every single moment got us to this point, and we just got to keep going.
Yes, I'm here for it.
Thanks for talking with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, Amanda. And so if people have any questions, do you have, like, a social media, like a Twitter account that people can follow you?
Yeah, you can literally at Amanda Nicole, and Nicole is N-I-Q-O-L-E. And you can add me on Twitter, Instagram, and then my email, if you want to slide in my emails, is AmandaNicole@gmail.com.
I mean, just, that's what I mean when I say Black Girl Magic, willing to share her resources and her world. Because we all we get.
Well, we got. Clearly black women are going to save this country.
Literally.
Literally. Black and brown women unite. Save it, even though it should not even be saved. But here we are.
Don't save it. It don't want to be saved. Okay, I promise I'm done. No more rap lyrics. Okay, this is Danny G, and the G is for good night. Oh.